I'd like now to welcome back to the program Ben Swan. He is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Great to be here as always.
And Suzanne Fuqua is here. She's Director of Behavior and Training. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you actually get animals ready, particularly dogs, but dogs and cats, so that they are adoptable. And that means they come in with what some of us might call bad dog behaviors, and you send them out as good dogs.
Well, we like to try. It's not always quite as simple as that. The behavior department of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter assesses behavior when dogs come in as stray or owner surrender. So we have a standard set of tests that we do to see what we can find out about that dog
and cat. What kind of tests?
We do an affiliation. We take the dog outside, we turn it loose, we see how long it takes before it comes to us, just to judge sociability. We do a test, a food bowl test, where we put food down and then we try to take it away to find out if the dog will guard that food.
Is that bad if they do?
It is. It is a potential problem in the home because it could be a bite. Could be a child could go for the food and the dog is guarding. We also do a body handling test so that we see how the dog tolerates being touched and handled. And then we do a dog-dog interaction to see if we can judge how dogs meet each other.
And that's my favorite one. It's the stuffy test. Well, not really the stuffy test, but it's sometimes they put this stuffed dog in a pen with the dog to see how they react.
Yeah, if we have a dog that we think is going to be terribly dog aggressive, we don't want to throw another dog under the bus. So we will test with Stuffy. And Stuffy is a life-size dog. And we can...
Life-size meaning?
Stuffed.
17-pound, like, life-size?
Probably 30
or
to 40.
Probably 30 to 40-pound
dog. Okay, so big, dog. Medium to
medium
large size, dog.
Medium-sized dog, yeah. And it doesn't tell us if a dog is going to be friendly with other dogs based on that, but it can tell us if a dog is going to be really dog aggressive.
Yeah.
So we make those decisions.
So let's say you get a dog in and the dog is frightened, it's food bowl aggressive, it's not good with other dogs. What do you do then?
Depends on the severity of the problem. Food bowl guarding is a very modifiable behavior, so we generally work with those dogs unless they are... We use a fake hand to test taking the bowl away. If they bite the hand, that's a bit more of a problem. If they growl or hunker down over the food, we do a food bowl protocol. And in sometimes a week or less, the dog is okay with food. If it's dog aggressive, severely dog aggressive, we don't place. It's impossible for us to fix that behavior in a shelter. If it is mildly dog aggressive, if it is leash reactive, we can do some dog-dog socials and help the dog with that. Some issues, if they have body handling, they resist body handling, pretty easy to modify that behavior. So we set up behavior protocols and we work with them until they're ready to go.
What's an example of a food bowl behavior protocol? Like, what does that look like?
Generally speaking, when a dog is guarding food, it's a scarce resource, so they want that, and they want to protect it. So the first thing we do is we free feed them, so they can have all the food they want over a couple of days. So we try to convince them in that way that nothing to guard.
So every time their bowl is empty, you put more kibbles
mm-hmm.
in?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that by itself is good enough. We don't have to do anything else. If the dog is still guarding a little bit, we will put the regular food in the bowl, and then we, through a series of steps, add like canned food or something really, really good. So the idea is to teach the dog that when the person approaches the bowl, something better is coming. And frequently, and I would say almost probably usually, after three or four of those protocols over three or four days, the dog is actually looking up, waiting, because the good stuff's coming from the person who's approaching the bowl.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I guess, in people psychology, you call it behavior modification therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I did that with my dog who'd had a terrible, before I got her, she had a really traumatic, life-threatening experience in a car, and she never wanted to get in the car. Mm-hmm. So I took her to the dog park every day for 6 months or 2 months or something like that, and now she loves getting in the
car. Because she knows at the end of the trip is always this reward.
Right. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. It didn't take and nearly as much as I thought. She would hyperventilate in the car.
You know,
she
was really
so scared.
That was a really interesting point, because we've talked about actually getting dogs. We've talked about getting a vehicle that we could put on the shelter's properties that the dogs can go in and out of it. Because a lot of times, these dogs, they get adopted, they go straight to a car, and they won't go in the car because they're not used to it.
Yeah.
But it takes a little coaxing, a little bit of treats.
Do you ever get dogs with eating disorders who haven't had enough to eat or who've had to compete with bigger dogs or whatever for their food, and so that's part of their thing? In other words, they never, no matter how much food you give them, they'll just eat until they get sick.
I don't recall us ever having a dog like that at the shelter. It may have happened, but not since I've been there.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, they're guarding a scarce resource, and once they realize it's there and they're satiated, then
they're okay.
Not, yeah.
Now, what about dogs? And I think this is a difficult problem, although probably pretty rare around here. Dogs who just didn't have enough contact with people when they were puppies and really don't have that ability to connect to people.
That is actually not an uncommon problem. We get a lot of dogs that we call reactive. And reactive, I use that word rather than aggressive, because aggression carries with it a lot of baggage, that word.
Yeah.
It can be a useful word, but it carries a lot of stuff with it. So we use reactive. And they are people reactive. They may be neophobic, which is a fear of new things.
Neophobic, that's a great word.
So anything new, that garbage can that got moved, new. That coat that's lying on the chair, new. We get a lot of that, and that is the theory is that that's lack of exposure in the socialization period from like 3 weeks to 12 weeks.
And that's why we have a free puppy classes for puppies, that people adopt puppies. We have every Tuesday night. They come in and are exposed to a lot of different things, music, different hats, all kinds of things, and also other dogs, which is really great.
Yeah, we started that program specifically to deal with that as early as we possibly could. It doesn't mean that the dog is not going to have issues, but it means that they will have fewer issues if people come to puppy class, and it's controlled, positive exposures.
So once you get past a point where the dog is not, you're pretty sure it's not going to bite people when they're moving the food bowl, and that it's not so aggressive or reactive that the person in the new home is going to be in danger, but it's still completely disobedient. It won't come, and it pulls on the leash and things like that. What do you do next?
Actually, those are easy things.
Really?
We have to leave something for the new adopter to do. So we leave them to do the recall, the sit, the down. That's the cream. That's easy stuff.
But I should point out that we also have a really incredible dog walking, or we call it the Humane Dog Walking Program, where our dogs get used to people coming up and putting a harness on, putting a leash on. They walk around. They have some chance to get a break from the shelter life and just sniff things and stuff like that. And that's really, I think, really helpful in just getting dogs accustomed to different things. And Susanna also really enhanced that program. And it's really been effective for many of the dogs in our shelter.
Now, if people call and say, I'm having a problem with my dog, it barks all night, can they talk to you and you can sort of talk them through it without meeting the dog?
It depends on the problem. Many times I can give people some advice over the phone. Sometimes it's just a mechanical thing, move this, put this there, let the dog out more often, keep the dog in at night. So I can do some of that on the phone. Behavior is influenced by environment. And so sometimes I have to actually go to the home to see what the environment is and see if we can fix some things, take things out, put things in, change routines. So I do both things.
And so you do home visits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been talking about dog training. Is there cat training? Does this exist? Are cats trainable?
Oh, absolutely. If you can find something that a cat wants that you can provide them as a reinforcer or reward, you can train them.
Tuna fish.
If that's what the cat likes. The thing about the reinforcer or the reward is the cat tells you what it likes. And we have a harder time finding, particularly in the shelter, we have a harder time finding those kinds of things because cats don't respond quite the way dogs do. Their behavior is modifiable. We don't do a lot of training of tricks and that kind of stuff. We work on sociability, approaching, being picked up, Sometimes we get fearful cats that either owner surrenders or strays, and we do a what we call a fearful to friendly F2F program. And we have been really successful in getting these fearful cats to approach using this protocol, and we work with them sometimes even after they go to adoptions, because they, in the receiving building, we get them approaching and we get them comfortable. Then they move and change environment and they regress a little bit, and then we work with them again. We have cats that have been there for a while that start becoming, averse to being handled, so we have to work with those cats. We generally do it with what we call negative reinforcement. So we reward them for good behaviors that we find appealing, which is approaching, by giving them some distance, because if they're fearful, distance is what they want. Sometimes we can find kitties that like Fancy Feast or catnip or sometimes tuna, and we can actually use
cats
that.
Cats don't like tuna universally?
No.
Really?
Like, Honey Harris says her cat is a vegetarian, which I don't believe.
No.
My cat is not a vegetarian, but he does not like tuna.
Really? So there's no universal thing that cats love?
No.
Very interesting. I guess finicky is one of those words.
Finicky feline. Yeah, I guess that just kind of trips off the tongue.
So I'm sure that some of the dogs and cats that you get in that have these problems are animals that have been abused, sometimes quite badly abused. Do you ever see situations where somebody approaches who must have reminded them of their previous abuser?
You know, it's really hard to know. I think we have fewer abuse cases that come through the shelter than sometimes people think, because animals that are afraid of things may not have had necessarily a bad experience. It could be that neophobia, it's a new thing. And certainly there are animals that come through there that have had bad experiences, but unfortunately we can't interview them and find out, so just have to kind of work with what we have.
They ain't talking.
Yeah.
Well, what about that dog who was found in Española after having been stolen
from
Kentucky?
That was pretty awesome. That was awesome.
I would love to interview that dog.
Wouldn't you?
And know how what happened along the way. But anyway, we have some animals that are up for adoption, which we, of course, have to talk about.
Of course we do. We have lots of great animals at the shelter today and every day. And so something I wanted to talk about was Darko. Darko, you may look at Darko. So we're also having this.
Darko is a very cute black and white cat. Who looks very, very intelligent.
And thanks to Suzanne and her staff and other people at the shelter, we do have a lot of animals that are getting used to the shelter environment, and they're there a long time. Unfortunately, they, like puppies or kittens, those always fly out the doors, but some of these other animals take a little bit longer. And so we've reduced the adoption fee for some of those animals. This isn't one of them, but I just wanted to mention that we have people sponsoring animals that have been there for a while, and some businesses who also are just taking up the, really getting spreading the word out about the animals.
So that's wonderful. Now this is a kitten, Darko.
That's a kitten. Yeah,
it's 8 months old.
But Brad here, he's been here for a while, right, Suzanne?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's a great looking.
Brad
dog.
Is a dog.
Yeah.
And he's also a puppy. He's 10 months old, and he's a Labrador mix with very pointy straight ears going up in the air and a short coat. And he looks like
Brad Pitt, doesn't he? Is that what
he looks
him Brad
like?
Pitt?
Yeah. Brad. He looks like a
little Brad Pitt.
Labrador dark Brad Pitt. Thank you very much, yeah. Ben Swan, for making that comparison. And so, lots of wonderful animals available at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter. Now, one of the things that I think is important is that there's no right way to train a dog in terms of what the outcomes are. I mean, it'd be good to have dogs that come every time you call for them to come, but some dogs really have quite a lot of obedience in their repertoire and others don't, and it really depends on the relationship between the owner and the animal.
Very much depends on the relationship, but also the consistency. I think that's what a lot of owners forget about doing, if you do this, there's a consequence to it. But if
right.
you do this, then you get a reward. So things like that. If there's a consistency in there, you can, then you have a much better basis for having a great animal. Wouldn't you say so, Suzanne?
Sure. The thing about animals is they need structure, which is hard for humans. The more we can make things clear, don't get on the couch ever. Much easier for a dog to understand than it's okay because it's Saturday, but it's not okay because it's Sunday and I have people coming over.
Right. But what I'm saying is there's no, like, some people have their dogs on the couch, and if the rule is it can go on the couch, then that's okay for that household.
Absolutely. Everybody gets to pick their own rules. It's just better if they're consistent. So if the dog can get on the couch, I have no problem with that. Unless there are issues of guarding the space, and then you might have to address that. But sleeping in the bed is not inherently a bad thing. Getting on the couch is not inherently a bad thing. It just depends on the dog's reaction to it. And we may need to adjust it if we need to adjust the behavior that goes along with it.
See, Mary Charlotte, you actually are a really good dog trainer. All your dogs love to sleep with you. They love to cuddle up with you on the couch.
I say, get on the bed. Good dog.
Excellent.
See? And you're consistent.
Every excellent.
And they can learn some variations within that, too. Is there anything that is, I mean, you said we make our own rules, but are there any kind of universals that dogs should never be allowed to do?
You know, I guess that kind of depends. I think it's really hard to say because, you know, I was going to say jumping up on people, really a bad habit. But some people don't care. If your dog is 5 pounds and it jumps on your shin, that's different than if your dog is 60 pounds, it jumps on your head.
Yeah, or on your grandmother.
Or on your grandmother. So, you know, in general, we try to discourage things like jumping. We try to discourage mouthing, where dogs are putting their mouths on hands, even though they're not puncturing or anything. Try to encourage behaviors like sit, lie down, wait, the calm behaviors. It's hard to say that there's anything that they just shouldn't do in the normal range. I mean, obviously they shouldn't bite people. Obviously they shouldn't chase cars and bikes and that kind of thing.
Right.
But on the other hand, I was thinking like, well, yeah, biting definitely is a no-brainer, but then they have, you know, our dogs and police dogs, and they don't necessarily bite them. They might hold them. So
right.
It really depends on what you want your dog to be.
Right.
If you want your dog to be a companion, set out a couch potato, that's really easy. If you want your dog to be a runner, well, you got to make sure he's a good runner or he or she can physically keep up with it and, you know, make some allowances for the weather and things like that.
And if you want your dog to be a couch potato, don't get a Jack Russell Terrier.
Good advice.
The best thing about Jack Russell Terriers is that little handle at the end, right? That little tail that you
you can pull them out of.
Any
holes.
Trouble they're getting into.
It's true. We know this very well. So the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society has a phone number, which
is... Yes, 983-4309 if you want to call. Our training and behavior department, call extension...
280.
Okay. And Suzanne Fuqua is the director of behavior and training. Ben Swan is not only with the shelter, but you also...
I do lots of different things.
You do lots of different things. You write articles about animals, and you also... manage the resale store.
No, I stopped doing that. But
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's still a great store.
Right.
Look with the cat dragged in.
Look with the cat dragged
in. I go in there all the time and just say hi to my my fan base. You know, got to support them.
And it's next to the Satellite Clinic where people can get dog licenses and spay-neuter and basic shots and vaccinations.
On Fridays.
And heartworm and things like that.
Yes.
So I want to thank you both very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, thank you. As a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
As always.